Welcome back to the DX Audio Service for February 1994. Blistery night. Plugged in the block heater on the car, so hopefully everything starts up tomorrow just fine. And give you another little hint about where we're at. We are to the west of KFGO. There's one hint for you. We'll get it a little bit closer in just a little while. But right now, from the frostbitten north, here's Phil Wayne with the Market Scope.
Thank you, Fred, and hello, DXers. This is a very red-faced Phil Wayne with Market Scope, a monthly glimpse at radio markets around this frozen land. I'd like to send my apologies to Skip Dabblestein, who dropped me a note recently, to ask whatever happened to the rest of the Albuquerque Market Scope. Well, Skip, to be honest with you, due to the excess of helium in the Findlay area, one DX audio service editor just kind of let things slip, so to speak. So let's put Austin on hold for a bit and finish out what we previously started. Skip?
Occupying the 1350 spot on the AM dial is KABQ, yet another Spanish language station.
De los ahorros, buenos precios y amabilidad de Damasio's Food and Liquor Store en el 913 San Pedro Sureste cuando vaya en persona a recoger o llevar su engomado de KABQ.
Pick up your KABQ bumper sticker at Damasio's Food and Liquor Store and fill in the coupon on the back. There will be a drawing every Friday and you may win $25 worth of groceries. You need not be present to win.
Recuerde que puede ser ganador de sorteo de $25 de comida en Damasio's Food and Liquor Store. No tiene que estar presente para ganar.
Keep on listening to KABQ La Nueva Onda or stop by the Damasio's Food and Liquor Store at 913 San Pedro Southeast.
KABQ La Nueva Onda
and Bentley's present another Super Jam Sunday.
Este domingo, 8 de marzo, puro party at Bentley's, 8904 Manal Northeast, between Wyoming and the moon.
This Sunday, KABQ presents Los Hermanos Vaca.
Quiero que sepas que sigo el camino.
Hey, baby, ¿qué pasó?
On the Johnny Canales show last Sunday,
then you work at Bentley.
Now is your chance to see them live.
Ay, qué bonito bailar.
KABQ wants to thank all of you who have come out in support of New Mexico's finest talent. And we hope to see even more of you this Sunday night at Bentley.
Admission is only $3. Coors, Coors Light, and Coors Extra Gold Long Neck are only $1.75 all night long.
Come early because the fun starts at 6.
No falte. Este domingo a las 6, Los Hermanos Vaca.
Only at Bentley, 8904 Manal.
For the past several years, KRZY on 1450 kilohertz and its sister station KRST on 92.3 megahertz have held down the top spot in the Albuquerque radio market. They simulcast modern country western programming on a full-time basis.
KRST. You're listening to the home of today's hot new country, Rodney Foster. People, right every time somebody calls on that, they say Rodney.
Rodney. First time I saw that, I thought, boy, that's a misprint. I'm going to have to.
Yeah, say Rodney. Yeah, it's Rodney, but it's right. But it is Rodney.
With an A.
7:21, 21 minutes after 7. Getting ready for St. Patrick's Day.
That's right. We're doing something big.
Tomorrow we turn. Well, I can't tell you what we're turning green, because then it would give away the surprise.
We're turning Tony green.
No. But be here tomorrow morning as we turn it green.
It's a Tabloid Tuesday today, coming up the top tabloid headlines.
Right. Speaking of...
nice segue.
tabloids, and let's get a look at the roads. Brought to you by New Mexico's number one oil change center, Zip Lube, 6 spots around town in Santa Fe. Is it time to change your oil? Here's the eye on the sky.
There's been an accident down at Golf Course and Southern in Rio Rancho. It's blocking... northbound lane of the golf course as you are north of Southern. Of course, that's the lightly traveled portion, but there is still a long line if you are eastbound on Southern approaching golf course because they just got that moved out of the way. No lines coming from the west side using either of the bridges. This is KRST's eye in the sky.
And a mishap involving a motorcyclist clear on the other end of town at Carlisle and Gibson. Keep in mind, eastbound Montgomery, one lane from 25 up to Carlisle. And how quick things change. Now, Wyoming is the heaviest of the two gates. Eubank would be the better choice. I'm Nikki Duran for KRS2, where traffic comes first.
Thanks for making us your choice for today's hot new country and all your country favorites.
I listen to it at work most of the day because it's the best station in town. I live in Rio Rancho, so I love the traffic in the morning.
Best country music going.
Oh, I love it every morning. The news, weather, traffic report, my main objective.
Hot new country. 92.3 KRST.
7:24, 24 minutes after 7 o'clock.
Partly sunny and 70 today.
We have birthdays on the way. More from the tabloids, too, coming up. Here's Burks and Dunn, 92.3 KRST.
Out in the country, past the city limit sign, where the town looks good boogie.
Country 92.3 KRST. Tony Lynn, Andy Quinn sitting in this morning. 43 degrees, 728 on the birthday list. B. Michael Montoya, 40. Pat Trujillo, happy birthday to Pat. And Jenny Brown is 12 today.
Also, Billy Newsom's 35. Kara Nye, well, we don't have an age, but happy birthday.
At 1520 on Albuquerque's AM dial, we find KAMX, a daytime-only station. Owned by Coastal Communications, this station and its namesake affiliate at 107.9 on the FM dial simulcast an adult contemporary program format.
Mix 107.9. Listen, another extended zero stop, 30 minutes of New Mexico's best music mix coming up here for you on a Saturday. This is Paul Douglas. Hey, the New Mexico Museum of Natural History has all kinds of special weekend activities. I betcha. Mix 107.9 weather scan forecast. Mostly sunny today, high in the middle 50s. Fair and cold tonight, mid 20s, maybe even lower. Increasing cloudiness on Sunday, but warmer. Look for high tomorrow in the low 60s. 36 in Santa Fe, 45 now in Albuquerque. And on your FM, we're KAMX with New Mexico. Best music mix.
Mix 107.9.
Mix 107.9 giving you an above average Monday, at least a chance at one anyway. Chance to win tickets to see the Average White Band. They're coming to town Monday, March 15th at the El Rey Theater. Of course, this is with the station that has New Mexico's best music mix. Mix 107.9, our own Sherry Chance out at Garrett's, live and in color and on remote, right?
Our last stop on the AM dial is station KZKL, operating at 1580 kilohertz. Licensed to Rio Rancho, this station and its affiliate KZKL-FM on 101.7 megahertz have used a golden oldies format to achieve a number 7 ranking in the Albuquerque radio market.
KZKL Albuquerque, KZKL FM, Rio Rancho Albuquerque. We are Cool 102 FM with good times with great oldies. To your song Saturday, all your favorite oldies at 764-8331.
Get your motor running.
It's a Beatles weekend with double plays at their best.
Cool 102.
At Cool 102, we'd rather fight than switch.
You beat me to the punch. And when the curtain was done, the only bar that wasn't blood, it was a boxer and a fighter by his dream.
We're Cool 102.
Cool 102 is KZKL Albuquerque. KZKL FM Rio Rancho Albuquerque with good times, great oldies. Deedle, deedle, dee, wubba, wubba, wubba. Obla dee, obla da. It's a Beatles weekend.
The first spot on the Albuquerque FM dial is occupied by KLYT on 88.3. Owned by Christian Broadcasting Academy Incorporated, K-Light is another of the city's several gospel music stations.
Helping you to shine his light through your life, we are New Mexico's Lights, 88.3 K-Light FM. And Mark Pogue, love is just a prayer away. from your friends, K-Line FM.
KANW shows up at 89.1 megahertz. This station is owned by the Board of Education of the City of Albuquerque and transmits a full range of educational and ethnic programs.
Digital Underground, still kicking it and jamming it with Kiss You Back on New Mexico's First FM. DJ Martinez kicking out the music for you, trying to work on your requests. Keep them coming, 24278. This is a jam right here. This is Joe Public. Live and learn New Mexico's original urban station.
Peace. You got to live and learn.
At 89.9 megahertz, we find KUNM, the station of the University of New Mexico. The format consists of locally produced educational and ethnic programs and feeds from the National Public Radio Network.
KUNM. This is the Singing Wire you're listening to. We're honoring women in the area for the International Women's Day for all the accomplishments that they have done in honor of women in general and Native American women on the Singing Wire. I have Pearl Sunrise in here with me this afternoon. Also, right now we're having an open house that's going on now from 2 to 4 p.m. And there'll also be a book raffle coming in. There's a lot of people up here, so come on up. We're at the Onate Hall on campus. Also, in the New Mexico, in the UNM College of Arts and Sciences, only 19 out of 168 tenured full professors are women. Of the full-time faculty in arts and sciences, 79 out of 378 are women. If you support a change in this imbalance, please sign the petition located both outside Pope Joy Hall and circulating inside. And this is something that's going on right now for the International Women's Day.
Well, thank you, Skip, for all your radio tidbits and ratings information. I'll see you back here next month. This is Forgetful Phil for the DX Audio Service. And now, the man known for having the mind of an elephant and a vehicle to match, John Bowker.
Historical Moments in Radio, a collection of stories from the rich and exciting past on the AM radio dial. Hello again, I'm John Bowker, and this month I want to start a series of stories that'll take us back to the confusing days of radio broadcasting, back to the mid-1920s when the business was just beginning to define itself. And you know, a lot of books have been written on this subject, not the least of which was a portion of the book and TV program called Empire of the Air you may have seen. Instead of reading directly from such books at great length, however, I want to read to you from editorials and letters to the editors of radio broadcasting, magazines of that period, and newspapers. Now, some of what you hear in this series will be factual, some of it will be opinion, but I think you're going to find it an interesting portrayal of broadcasting, and in some ways will sound as if it had been written just yesterday. And some of it will sound crazy, and it may raise other questions as to what they're talking about, which I'm hoping to clarify over the next few Historical Moments programs we have during 1994. I'm going to start with a lead article from the magazine entitled Radio Broadcast in its September 1926 edition. The article is called The March of Radio. Here goes. When the eyes of legislators first turned to radio some 14 years ago, that would have been just after the sinking of the Titanic, they placed its control in the hands of the Department of Commerce. Since then, under the care of Secretary of Commerce Herbert Hoover, it has been safely guided through a period of flaming youth. But radio is now ready for a nervous breakdown, having been jilted by Congress just as the age of spinsterhood approaches. Alarmists predict chaotic days for radio now in 1927. In Chicago courts, a decision has been rendered confirming the obvious fact that no branch of government has the authority to assign a particular wavelength in the broadcasting medium to any station. Another court ruling, this time in the District of Columbia, makes it compulsory upon the Department of Commerce to issue broadcasting licenses to all who apply. An unconfirmed report at press time states that the Chicago Federation of Labor plans to operate a high-powered station in that city on the same wavelength as WEAF in New York. Well, with radio neglected by Congress and the Department of Commerce defeated in the courts, Secretary Hoover could not be blamed for surrendering control of radio to the mercies of anarchy, said one editorial. It went on to say it's possible that some of the 650 applicants for broadcast station licenses may actually begin operating on wavelengths already in use. But we feel certain that common sense will rule the situation. Even without a national legal control, the present setup of wavelength allocation and regulation is sufficiently sound to survive a short period of self-management, we hope. But the failure of government to pass radio legislation cannot be condoned. Our legislators have willfully mingled this nonpartisan problem with their political wrangles. And the day will come when new radio laws take effect, and when they do, the following basic questions must be answered. First, who shall administer the radio law? Two, and by the way, listen to this one carefully. Under what conditions shall broadcasting licenses be extended to applicants so that the number of available channels shall be most equitably distributed? By the way, that doesn't sound very American to me, does it? It takes away all free enterprise. Anyway, three, what regulations shall control the political use of the broadcasting medium? Four, what shall be the broadcaster's liability with respect to slander and libel? Five, what power limitation shall be imposed? And six, if owners of copyrights permit one station to use their material, shall they be compelled to extend the same right to other stations on other terms, or should they be the same terms? Seven, under what conditions should preventable electrical interference be considered an invasion of public rights? And I'm not sure what that means. The dictatorial powers of the Department of Commerce had clearly demonstrated its ability to cope with the regulation of broadcasting up until the Chicago court decision, which we'll go into next month, by the way. Radio is not a public utility. It is non-essential. So it does not belong under the control of a commission, such as the Interstate Commerce Commission. Such commissions are expensive and inefficient and consist of political appointees. Well, we'll continue this soul-searching item in a month or two here on Historical Moments. Remember now, this was all written in 1926, a year before the Radio Act of 1927 went into effect. Time for a happy birthday. Happy birthday this month to KMPC in Los Angeles. Started officially February 18th, 1927. Oh, and WTIC in Hartford, February 10th, 1925. Oh, and good old WKIZ in Key West, where my wife and I were just a couple of weeks ago. They started on Groundhog's Day, February 2nd, 1959. For Historical Moments in Radio, this is John Bowker.
Well, let's check out our musings from members. These are the thoughts of the National Radio Club members and do not necessarily reflect those of the National Radio Club, the DX Audio Service, its members or sponsors.
Greetings, DX Audio Service members. This is Johnny Ott, WA8WFH in Minneapolis, and it is Wednesday, January the 5th, and it's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and we got a couple comments here. First of all, for Jack Couch in Frenchlick, Indiana, home of Larry the Birdman, a couple thingies. First of all, I think I remember hearing that WRNO is also on FM, at least it was when I thought I remember hearing about it, at 100.3, I believe, simulating with their international shortwave station transmitter, except when they pulled away for special programming. But I believe WRNO was doing a rock format. Secondly, you wanted to know what you were hearing in the 60s and maybe into the early 70s with the San Francisco Giant games and 49ers and stuff. What you were probably hearing was a bunch of transmitters, and maybe John Bowker might know something about this as well. At one time, there were a bunch of transmitters that were owned and operated by things like RCA Communications and Press Wireless Incorporated and other outfits. And apparently what they did, I gather, these were point-to-point transmissions that were meant to go overseas. When you were hearing the Giants and 49er games, you heard network relay feeds from the Golden West Radio Network. And because I remember picking these up myself. And the originating station for those seeds was KSFO in San Francisco. They also did things like the California Golden Bears football games. And if you heard anything out of New York, you heard either New York Yankees or New York Mets or whatever. And sometimes they would do the games in Spanish. And if they weren't doing that, they were doing special network feeds from NBC or whatever, everything from the World Series to the national conventions, Democratic and Republican. Sometimes you could hear the Indianapolis 500 over that network, originating from WIBC in Indianapolis. And you'd hear the actual network stuff, things only meant for engineers wearing headphones in the control rooms, and instructions and stuff. It was fascinating stuff. I thoroughly enjoyed it. The All-Star Games, stuff like that. And while I was home for Christmas vacation, I had a chance to read The Empire of the Air. Fascinating book. It's on cassette, by the way, for those who are interested. It's on four cassettes, four tracks, slow speed, great book, which leads me to a couple questions for perhaps one John Bowker. I'd like to know if John has ever, I'm sure he did while he was at RCA, if he ever actually met and knew Messrs. DeForest, Armstrong, and Sarnoff. And do we have anywhere enshrined in the deep within the golden files tapes or wax cylinders or whatever, reels of tape, of these men's actual voices, speeches or lectures or articles or interviews that they ever did? I bet it would be fascinating stuff for John Bowker or whomever to feature on the history of radio, or perhaps an After Dark tape. I think that would really be nifty, because these men did a lot. And I'd like to know more about especially what Armstrong had to go through. And I take it that RCA is no more. If my understanding is correctly, they were either bought by the Japanese, and the RCA building is no more, and all that sort of stuff. So I'd like to know more about that. So anyway, hope y'all have a wonderful, happy new year, and hope y'all got all the things you always wanted and all the things that go with it from Santa Claus there. And we'll talk at you later. Bye.
Well, Johnny, it's good to hear from you, first of all. This is John Bowker in Florida, and Fred, let me hear your question here this evening. Let me take your questions. I can't answer them all, I guess, but at least in the reverse order. You're quite right. RCA Corporation is no more. It ended in 1987. And by the way, that's when I retired. GE, the General Electric Company, you know, good old Connecticut-based GE, bought RCA. Because it wanted not only some of its technical activities, but it also wanted the National Broadcasting Company, which, of course, RCA owned and operated. So, yeah, that all happened in 1987. And RCA, the name was licensed to the Philips Company to continue building TV receivers in Bloomington, Indiana, with technical offices in Indianapolis. The RCA record division was sold to a German firm. The RCA Global Communications name was kept by, I think, MCI, and that was in Piscataway, New Jersey. So anyway, RCA was bought and split up, and GE maintained the National Broadcasting Company and the GE Americom satellite business. I believe those are the two major parts of RCA that GE still owns. So everybody came out pretty much ahead, except, you know, we all kind of miss RCA. Now, coming back to the matter about Sarnoff, DeForest, and Armstrong and The Empire of the Air, it is a terrific book. In fact, I have to thank Fred Vobey for calling that to my attention several years ago. The matter of having on tape any of the voices, I don't personally have tapes of any of them speaking. I can assure you that I never, as an RCA employee, I never would have met DeForest nor Armstrong. Sarnoff, yes. The Princeton, New Jersey Research Center, called the David Sarnoff Research Center, has as a wing of the building a library devoted to all of David Sarnoff's memorabilia. The key that he used in the Wanamaker building the night the Titanic sank. And, oh, all kinds, the key to the city of Tokyo, because it was Sarnoff who President Truman sent over to Japan after World War II to straighten out the use of frequencies by the Japanese so that they wouldn't interfere with all the other Pacific Rim countries. After all, the Japanese had no more Navy or Merchant Marine, of course, back there, but they did want all these frequencies for communicating with ships. And our question on this side of the Pacific Ocean was, why? Anyway, Sarnoff went over and, as a true diplomat, was able to arrange everything and was given the key to the city. And, oh, there are a thousand such stories as that. So when the library was built, I had expressed great interest in the library, along with two other people at the David Sarnoff Research Center, where I was a young research engineer. And Sarnoff selected the three of us to become program hosts whenever anybody came into his library. So I got to meet with David Sarnoff on a number of occasions. I can tell you his proudest belonging. It was a high school diploma, no kidding, from Stuyvesant High School in New York, because Sarnoff never finished the eighth grade. He had all these PhDs from the University of, you know, Stanford and Yale and, oh goodness, I can't begin to tell you, and only one high school degree. That was from Stuyvesant High School. And as I used to tell the story of people coming through the Sarnoff Library, if you ever are in New York City and would like to see probably the best-equipped high school science laboratory in the world, go to Stuyvesant High School, and I don't have to tell you why it came out that way. The problem that the Empire of the Air book mentioned between Sarnoff and Armstrong was rather deep-rooted and has many, many facets. The thing the Empire of the Air didn't mention, to the best of my knowledge, is that Sarnoff called Armstrong aside and said, look, your FM patents and your interest in developing frequency modulation radio is directly at odds with the $100 million that I have spent on television development because we want the same frequencies. Armstrong agreed with that. Sarnoff pointed out that the potential commercial value of television far outstripped the commercial value of FM radio broadcasting. Armstrong said that was irrelevant, and that's where they disagreed. Armstrong, you may know, had married Sarnoff's secretary years before. That's another side of the story. Sarnoff offered Armstrong $1 million of his own money to back off, and Armstrong didn't, and ultimately took his own life, as you perhaps know Armstrong did, at the YMCA in New York City. DeForest, however, was a less controversial person and somewhat put upon, I think. DeForest had one series stroke of bad luck after another. I started to say the word stroke. I didn't mean to say stroke. That sounds medical, and I don't mean it that way. DeForest was the one who set up one of the early broadcast stations in New York and then decided that his antenna would work better if he moved it down toward Times Square, and so he did. But he neglected to tell the Department of Commerce about this, and they immediately put him off the air because DeForest had made some enemies in the Washington area, and they were just waiting for a chance to grab him, and they did. They put him off the air. The DeForest transmitter that was moved downtown in New York was ultimately moved to Detroit, Michigan, and was the first transmitter used by the predecessor of WWJ. But these stories go on and on, Johnny. Someday you and I will have to get together. Maybe we should all get together and... Fred Vobey, maybe we should have an after-hours thing on this whole business of the Empire of the Air. I can tell you that the best information I have is that DeForest, Armstrong, and Sarnoff shared exceeding egos. They were all very positive thinkers, though, and had the interest of electronics, communications, and ultimately broadcasting in their own hearts. They only viewed the things from different perspectives, and that led to problems because of their egos. So that probably doesn't answer anything, but it's a fun subject, and we'll get into it another time, perhaps. Now let's go over to line two, one of my favorite people in the whole state of Kansas. Here's Steve Bauer in Wichita.
Hi, this is Steve Bauer in Wichita, Kansas, reporting a minor format change on 1410 KQAM. They have dropped the music of the 40s and 50s. It was a satellite service. And are now simulcasting with the FM, KEYN, on 103.7 with an oldies format. However, middays are filled with G. Gordon Liddy, followed by Don and Mike, a simulcast of the 5 p.m. local news from Cake TV Channel 10, and a sports call-in show. Sports of KU and the University of Kansas, football and basketball, and the Kansas City Chiefs also can be heard. Saturdays features a program on Saturday mornings for home improvement, a talk show, and on Sunday afternoons, a computer talk show. The rest of the time, there's simulcast with the FM.
Hello, DX Audio Service members. This is Eric Buneman, N0UIH in Hazelwood, Missouri. Two things of interest as of this calling. It is coming up on 4:30 Eastern Time on the 8th of January. First off, WHJM 1180 kHz in Knoxville, Tennessee is now on at night with their 1-watt construction permit. Number two, WRTH 1430 kHz and WIL 92.3 MHz in St. Louis, Missouri is poised to buy KRJY 96.3 MHz also in St. Louis and plan to move into KRJY studios in Brentwood, Missouri. Thank you and have a nice morning.
Hello, this is Tim Hendel in Miami. Fred, you mentioned the pattern change on WIOD where listeners used to participate. Well, first of all, I should tell you that unfortunately they don't do that anymore. What that was, for people who never heard it, you would call up at the time of pattern change and you would make a noise like brrrr, and you would make that noise during the pattern change and Mike Ranieri would say, you're the plug puller for today. And then you'd get some kind of a prize. And the funnier noise you made, I guess the better prize you got. I'm sorry they did away with that. Also, Fred, in your interview with Jim Bridgewater of the FCC, no information was given about where to write, especially for those of us who were not in the Detroit office area. So could you perhaps give us a Washington address if we wish to write in with some station that we think is doing some kind of a technical violation? Thanks a lot.
Hello, this is Deb called back from Des Moines, Iowa on Saturday, January 8th at about 12:20. On January 1st, an FM station came over to an AM station. So 1460 AM in Des Moines is now KDMI. It's still a religious format. It was a rock and roll format. They had a KGGO on FM, and they just simulcasted it. And now on FM, they have KHKI came on at 5:30 last night, and it is a country music format.
Well, hello, this is Kevin LaRose in Renton, Washington. It's Saturday, January 8th, just a little bit after 8 p.m. There is an apparent format change on 600, the former CHRX in Vancouver, B.C., apparently is changing their call letters to CKBD, that's CK Bravo Delta, and they are calling themselves The Bridge, and starting tomorrow, Sunday at noon, they are going to be contemporary Christian music. They are billing themselves as the first contemporary Christian music station in Canada.
Paul in New Jersey, and wouldn't you know it, right after I called in saying WVNJ wasn't on yet, they came on. WVNJ 1160 Oakland, New Jersey, came on the air on December 13, 1993. Currently, their schedule is 0600 to midnight. In the morning, they run a mix of soft black and light jazz music, and it seems like it's Kenny G every third selection. They have religious programming during the day, Spanish in the late afternoon, a talk program between 17 and 1800 Eastern, and then black gospel music until midnight. They are 10,000 watts a day, 2,500 watts night, and good luck, people in the Midwest, because they're rather severely directional to the east day and night.
Hello, Fred Volby, and all the rest of the DXs on the DX Audio Service. This is Jeff Bennett, WA2AIV, calling from Albany, New York. Well, there have been two radio changes in the Albany area. WROWAMNFM were sold. The station was bought by Albany Broadcasting, and their FM call letters are now WYJBFM. And they fired most of their announcers and kept the format pretty much the same, but they call it soft hits with a lot of fancy jingles. On the AM side, WROWAM still continues to keep the AM call sign, but the format is all news, and what they are doing is simulcasting the programming of WPTR on 1540. Since Albany Broadcasting owns WPTR and WFLY, they bought WROW AM and FM and made the changes to the new facilities that were just bought by this particular company. And that's what's happening in the Capital District. Have a good one. Catch you all later on.
Good morning, Fred. This is Robert Gagnon reporting on. Today is Friday, January 14th, 1994. I'd like to report a call letter change on AM 1450 in Lincoln, Maine. It is no longer WTOX in Lincoln. It's WCOS, and it's playing country western music. So please, if you would, note to Jerry Starr that that WTOX is no longer around. It's WCOS. And hope everything is going well for you, but and I'd like to also report another station just recently went stereo. It used to be a mono station on FM 103.1 WDME out of Dover Foxcroft. They were mono at one time, and now they are, just recently, they just went stereo. So hope to hear myself on tape here. So have a great day there, Fred. Good magazine. I like it a lot. Thank you.
Hi, Jim Snowbarger from Marshalltown, Iowa. Got a late-breaking DX test here for Saturday night, really Sunday morning, February 20th, on 1340 kilohertz KVBR, Brainerd, Minnesota. We'll be testing with 1,000 watts non-directional. Sometimes these little low-power local channel things can really get out, so check that. It will be Morse code and test tones. 1340, KVBR, Brainerd. And you can send your signal reports to me if you like. My address is in the bandscan column, of course. But the engineer would also like to hear from you. His name is Mark Persons, P-E-R-S-O-N-S, at 402 Buffalo Hills Lane, Brainerd, Minnesota. Brainerd is B-R-A-I-N-E-R-D. Zip is 56401. If you'd like to call him during the test, well, he'd be excited about that. He is really kind of into this test. It's area code 218-839-1326. He volunteered the test. I didn't even contact him. So check that out, and let's see what else. Oh, yeah, a couple of DX tests we did in November I wanted to tell you about. We did a KMCD test, 1570 from Fairfield, Iowa, 250 watts, and we didn't get any reports at all. Zero. So it goes. But we also did KBOE, Oskaloosa, 740 kilohertz. This is in Iowa as well. It was 250 watts. We got signal reports from Denver, Swan Lake, Manitoba. It's clear up on the Manitoba-Saskatchewan border, about 300 miles north of the border. Geez, that's probably 800 miles from Oskaloosa. They heard code and voice, both up there. Signal reports from Madison and Chicago, Pierre, South Dakota. We heard from Pittsburgh and Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania. They got mostly code over there. Also, Rochester, New York. And does Pequannock, Connecticut sound familiar? Charleston, West Virginia. Huntsville, Alabama. New Albany, Mississippi. And St. Louis. We also heard from the production director of WSM down in Nashville. He received us. 250 watts. No more than that. He also mentioned the guy in Nashville, and I wonder if you have observed the same thing. WPAD 1560 from Paducah, Kentucky. Supposed to run 1,000 watts directional at night, but they're strong everywhere. Like, they might be running their 10 kilowatt daytime power. Are you getting WPAD on 1560? Lately, the conditions have been odd here from the Midwest. The other night at 9 o'clock, I got San Antonio and Mexico City, but I couldn't hardly get anything at all out of Detroit, Cincinnati, Louisville, anything over east. Except that I did get JBC-1, 700 from Jamaica. Well, they were fairly weak, but nothing at all from WLW. Strange conditions. Though, that I guess that's the excitement of DXing, isn't it? Did I forget to mention the KVBR test from Brainerd, Minnesota, February 19th, will be from 1 to 1:30 a.m. Eastern Time, Sunday morning, February 20th, I guess it is. Let me get this right. You can edit this in. KVBR test will be Sunday morning, February 20th, 1 to 1:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Thanks. Sorry for the screw-up.
Well, we're sorry for the bad editing job there, Jim, because being on location here and close to a station on 550 in a city which almost got sunk. In fact, I think there was a song about that. I gave you enough of a hint here. But anyway, being on location here, we don't have our slick editing equipment, so let's just kind of stumble on through here and remind you that if you got something to say, something on your mind, give us a call on the Action Line. The telephone number is area code 419-224-3916. That's 24 hours a day for DX Audio Service members only. That's only for muses. Please do not use that telephone number to request information or order National Radio Club products, because that's not what the line is for. And so those calls don't really get taken. I have some information concerning some DX down south of the border, so to speak, down south of Florida, I should say, and in specific. The Voice of America announced in November that it's going to solicit offers for the purchase of its broadcasting facilities in Belize, Central America. In September of 1993, the VOA announced that the closure of the Belize relay station was required to meet its budget limitations for fiscal 1994 and beyond. Now, the plans are to cease scheduled broadcasting no later than March 31st of 1994 and to end VOA's presence in Belize no later than September 30th of 1994. The Belize radio station is located at Orange Point on the Gulf of Honduras, immediately to the southwest of Punta Gorda, Belize. It transmits programs originating in Washington, D.C., in Spanish and English, to Honduras and Guatemala. Now, the station, occupying approximately 240 acres, leased from the government of Belize, is equipped with two 100-kilowatt medium-wave amplitude-modulated transmitters, two directional antenna arrays, an on-site diesel power plant, satellite terminal equipment, and control and monitoring equipment. Plans are to determine if there is an interest in acquiring the Voice of America facilities, including the buildings, power generators, and distribution systems, radio transmitters, antennas, and more. While currently employed for medium-wave broadcasting, the site also has the potential for use as a shortwave or frequency-modulated station. While sale is preferred, the possibility of lease or lease-to-purchase arrangement may be considered. But it's emphasized that any arrangement with a new tenant is subject to approval of the government of Belize. Also from Russia, from the 1st of January, HCJB will relay daily 30-minute programs in English on the frequency of 1044 kilohertz via Moscow. They're 400, or make that 40 kilowatt transmitter. Time is going to be from 1900 to 1930 UTC. Well, that's just about all the time we have on this edition of the DX Audio Service. Like I said, it's going to be a little dry because we're on location. Next edition, which will be the March edition, we will be back in our normal studio and putting together the program with the slick music, slick editing, and the slicksters that normally do the announcing on the program. So hopefully we'll be back and all together, so to speak. And one last clue where I'm at, okay? You probably guessed that I'm in a state where there's a 550 station, and I'm to the west of Minneapolis, and I'm just south of the Canadian border. I'm in a city which is on Route 52. The city's name is named after a male duck, and I'm in the northern state. The northern state. See if you can get that, okay? Drop us a card or a letter to the DX Audio Service. Tell me where Fred Volpe is. And if you're the lucky listener What we'll do is we'll give you a fabulous National Radio Club prize. That's it for this edition of the DX Audio Service. I'd like to say 73s. Again, thanks to Jonathan Marks and to Ed Potter for mentioning us. 73.